is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the March 2011 edition of Good Housekeeping magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is called The Number One Crankiness Cure by Gretchen Rubin. Recently, I spent a year test driving the simplest and most effective way to be happier. If I finally took the time to do things I'd promised myself to do, like clean my closets, to read more, to stop yelling at my daughters in the morning, would I actually become happier? Yes, I learned that I really could make myself happier with a series of small steps. One of the first resolutions I made was to get more sleep. I knew that the more energy I had, the easier it would be to do the things that make me happy, and one of the most crucial factors in influencing my energy was sleep. Just the other night, in fact, my husband and I went to sleep at 9:30 p.m. This seemed preposterously early, but we were both very tired. I woke up the next morning before the alarm rang, feeling unusually cheerful and energetic. Sleep feels good. So why is it so hard to turn off the light? It's because those last hours of the day are precious. TV addicts squeeze in one more show. Workaholics finish just a few more emails. Parents relish the peace and quiet after the kids are finally tucked into bed. Readers, and this is my temptation, want to finish just one more chapter. I'm happier, though, when I get enough sleep. One study showed that an insufficient night's sleep was one of the top two reasons for being in a bad mood at work. The other reason was tight work deadlines. Another study suggested that getting one extra hour of sleep each night would do more for your daily happiness than getting a raise. But here's another reason why I think sleep matters so much for happiness. Exhaustion makes the mornings tougher. And the morning is a challenging time for many people, including me. First, if I don't get enough sleep, I try to stay in bed a little longer in the morning. If I get up at 6:45 a.m., we all have a calm, relaxed morning. If I get up at 6:55 a.m., we all have a frantic, chaotic morning. And a bad morning sets a course for a bad day. Like a lot of people, I have to get my daughter off to school first thing in the morning. Every single morning tries my patience to the utmost. In my big one isn't complaining, my little one is whining. Remembering to put everything in the backpacks, picking out clothes, finding the right mittens, leaving on time, it's a struggle every day. Feeling sleepy and slow means I have less patience than usual. That's unpleasant for everyone. Plus, I feel guilty for being snappish, which makes me more ill-tempered, so I behave even worse. Another bad effect of being sleepy is that it makes me feel less like exercising. As studies have demonstrated over and over, exercise is extraordinarily important to happiness. So I don't want to do anything that keeps me from the gym. And even though you think that sitting in front of a laptop typing isn't a strenuous way to spend your day, it does take a surprising amount of energy. When I don't get enough sleep, I find myself putting my head down on my desk just like kids in grade school. It's strange that turning off the light is so hard. You think, what could take less effort than that, than going to sleep? And yet, I find it takes a lot of effort to put myself to bed. It's just so much fun to stay up. I want to read or call my sister in Los Angeles. The time difference makes it hard for us to talk during the day. But I know that turning off the light will really boost my happiness. So I call my sister on the weekends. And I find other times to read during my day. Sleep is just too important. I've also resolved to get up at 6 a.m., so I have an hour to get myself organized before the rest of the family wakes up. And what does that mean? It means I have to go to sleep even earlier. After I wake up following a good night's sleep, I take steps to keep my morning heading in the right direction. A caffeine addict like me needs to get the coffee. I sing in the morning because it's hard to sing and stay grouchy. And sometimes I just jump up and down a few times. A few jumps makes me feel silly and energetic. How about you? Have you found that getting enough sleep has a big influence on your happiness and energy? Have you found any good strategies to make sure that you get the sleep you need? Here are a few tips from Good Housekeeping to sleep better tonight. Number one, get ready for bed before bedtime. Sometimes I feel too tired to go to bed, so I try to wash my face, take out my contacts, and brush my teeth well before I plan to turn out the light. Tip two, your kids have a bedtime, and so should you. Many people have no idea what time they should go to bed in order to feel rested. Be realistic. If you get up at 7:30 a.m., going to bed at 1:30 a.m. won't work. Tip number three, if your mind is racing, make a list of everything you need to do the next day. Just the act of putting those looming tasks in writing can boost your feelings of control and release your mind to rest. Number four, hang up your clothes and tidy up your bedroom. I take 10 minutes before bed to do simple tidying. It's not restful to be surrounded by clutter. Outer order contributes to inner calm. The final tip, for an hour before bedtime, I avoid checking emails. Help yourself drift into sleepiness and sleep by doing peaceful activities. Even fun computer activities like Facebook can detract from your sleep. How much is your house worth? Find out the latest tools and insider tips by Kelly Grant. Thankfully, home values aren't falling as rapidly as they were a few years ago. Real estate service Zillow.com reports that the average house lost 3.8% of its value in the first quarters of 2010. That's down from a whopping 9.2% in the first quarter of 2008. But unfortunately, real estate prices are still falling, and experts say they will continue to drop this year. Even if you're not planning to sell your home anytime soon, knowing your home's value is vital. It can impact how much homeowners insurance you need, what property tax rates you pay, and even which remodeling projects will have the best payoff. Luckily, several free home valuation sites make it surprisingly easy to estimate your home's current value. These services use complex algorithms and data from local records to churn out estimates. It's a good starting point as long as you follow up with a conversation with a local real estate agent. Here are a few good sites to use. Eappraisals, that is eappraisal.com, provides a low and high value for your home based on public records of sales of comparable homes nearby. Zillow.com, that's Zillow.com, will give you a value range for your home and lets you refine that estimate by adding more details, like the number of bedrooms and bathrooms, the square footage, and recent home improvements. And if you're literally on the move, try the free iPhone app, Zip, ZIP Realty. It allows you to find homes for sale as well as recently sold homes based on your GPS location. Each listing includes home details and pictures plus estimates from a few valuation sites. Using any of all these valuation sites can help increase your real estate knowledge. Once you have an estimate, follow up by talking with a local real estate agent. Even if you're not ready to sell, agents can help put a price tag on an intangible factor like your home's proximity to desirable schools or your neighbor's front yard collection of junked vehicles. You'll get the most accurate assessment from a certified appraiser, but about $350 per report, this service is best left until you really consider selling. It's also important to take what you learn in stride. We probably won't see a strong increase in home value for 3 to 5 years, says Zillow.com. Until then, we see a lot of small ups and downs. In the meantime, take these steps to boost your home's value. Freshen things up. Home improvement projects that include relatively minor updates, such as refaced cabinets, new flooring, or counters, currently deliver some of the best of returns. John, a residential appraiser in Omaha, explains that they don't cost you much, but it makes a good first impression with buyers. In fact, replacing an entryway door is the number one ranked project in trade publications, Remodeling, Cost versus Value. The project only cost about $1,700 on average, and you could expect to recoup 128% of that. That's a better return than the ever-popular bathroom and kitchen remodels, which return 62% and 63% and are much less expensive. A bathroom remodel can run from $52,000 and a kitchen to $100,000. Start neighborhood gossip. Buyers don't look at homes in a vacuum. Neighborhood influences a home's values, says Stephanie of the National Association of Realtors. While you can't control the market, using online real estate sites to boast about the area's best features could influence house hunters. On Realtor.com and StreetAdvisor.com, you score local parks, restaurants, and other amenities. Put your best facade forward. Upkeep is important. If buyers see chip paint, they think, what else is wrong? Explains Singer. Aim to do a few small upkeep projects each year, such as weather stripping doors. Here's why. Buyers look to negotiate a $2 discount for every dollar of damage noticed, says Housemaster, a home inspection service. Save, don't spend. Now isn't the time to dig into your home equity for a loan or line of credit. If home values continue declining, you could find yourself in the precarious position of owing your bank more than your home is worth. Be cautious and keep home improvement projects within the limits of your checking or savings account. Lower your property taxes. If your home has decreased in value over the past few years, you could be paying too much in property taxes. While counties automatically reassess property for tax purposes, procedures and timeframes vary. And if you disagree with their assessment, you'll need to file a property tax grievance, which appeals the on-the-record value of your home. Admittedly, it's a bit of a hassle, but it's often worth it. Here's how to do it. Call your hall. Start by calling your town hall and asking about your county's particular grievance process. They vary widely. Many city and town halls have a form and instructions about how to appeal right from their website. Forms vary by county, but they'll ask you to provide info like your home's current estimate value and the value of three comparable houses nearby. Info, you can find that on the town's website or on appraisal of your home. If it turns out you need an appraisal, ask your friends or your real estate agent to recommend a local appraiser they used recently. The typical cost is $350 and it takes about an hour. But beware of unsolicited letters promising to adjust your property taxes. They're usually scams. Also be wary of online appraisals. You need to have your numbers right, and those sites just provide estimates. You need a real appraiser for your appeal. Once you file your claim, you may need to attend a hearing. You can go by yourself or bring an attorney or an appraiser with you. Since many people are currently appealing, it could take a few months to get a hearing. The appeals board will send you a verdict via snail mail. Why I finally left. Like many victims of domestic abuse, Mary Clemens escaped and then returned many times. A report on just why it can take so long to break free and what every woman can learn from Mary's experience. This article is by Sabrina Erdely. Mary Clemens cowered in her sister-in-law's bedroom closet, afraid to breathe. She'd known her husband Chuck, not his real name, would come looking for her sooner or later. And he finally arrived. Have you heard from her? Mary heard Chuck demand of his sister, who feigned ignorance. In reality, Mary had been hiding out there for 2 days, ever since Chuck had smothered her with a pillow until she had seen spots. Mary had fled their apartment in the middle of the night, leaving their sleeping 3-year-old daughter behind, vowing never to go back. She spent the previous couple of days figuring out what to do. Now from the darkness of the closet, Mary listened as Chuck began to cry. "I don't know where she is," he wept. "I'm so worried." The sound of Chuck's sobbing gave Mary satisfaction, but also flooded her with sympathy. He sounded miserable. Mary was flattered to realize how devastated Chuck was by her leaving. It's proof that he really did care. She returned home the next day. "Yep, I went back for more," she says, 20 years later. It wouldn't be the last time. Over her 15-year marriage to Chuck, Mary Clemens fled again and again, with each return plunging her into more horrifying abuse. "Let's see, I've been gagged, tied up, beaten, stripped naked in the woods, and chased with a car," remembers Mary, age 42. "I had guns pulled on me and knives held to my throat. The abuse got pretty wicked. And yet, despite the violence, which was so extreme that a shelter worker once warned her, on a danger level, scale of 1 to 10, you're an 11. But she kept going back. Only on her 8th attempt did she finally escape for good at age 33. Though it may seem inconceivable that a battered woman would keep returning to the person causing her pain, Mary's pattern is typical. Studies have shown that 2/3 of battered women who leave their abusers go back within a year or two. It takes the average survivor 5 times before she escapes for good. Leaving this kind of relationship is a process because of the huge influence the abuser has on the victim. She can't just pick up and leave. The abuser makes that impossible by the control he exerts over her life. The only way most women can get out of this kind of relationship is with outside help. I would say the vast majority of women who leave it do it only with the support of family or friends. 1 in 4 women is abused in her lifetime, and there are 4.8 million intimate partner-related physical assaults and rapes each year. That makes domestic violence the leading cause of injury to women. On average, more than 3 American women are killed by their partners every day. And 1/3 of all women murdered in the U.S. lose their lives to domestic abuse. And because of the economic downturn, it has contributed to a spike in domestic violence. The economy plays a huge role, says Sue, the president of the National Network to End Domestic Violence. When money is tight, when people are anxious about finances, when someone has been laid off, the tension gets funneled into physical abuse. However, the sad truth is that shelters have been also hit hard by the economic downturn. 42% of them had to decrease their services. This landscape is undoubtedly discouraging to victims of domestic violence trying to make their escape, and it showcases exactly why a supportive inner circle can make a huge difference. "Without the people who helped me, I would never have gotten out, and I'd be dead by now," says Mary. She's a survivor, but it's buoyed by a sunny optimism, because when she needed help most, she discovered not only a wellspring of inner strength, but also the courage and compassion of her friends. Together, they allowed her to reinvent her life. Mary was able to leave because of her friends that helped her. Here are 8 smart steps you can do if you think a friend is in a dangerous relationship. Here's how to help her and perhaps save her life. Number 1, let your friend know you're there for her. The number one weapon abusers use is isolation. They do not want their victims to feel supported. Fight back by saying, "I miss hanging out with you. How are you?" That way she'll know she can open up to you when she's ready. Number 2, to be more direct, say, "I'm concerned that this person isn't treating you the way you deserve, and that's not okay. Here are some options to look into if you should feel the need." Give her phone numbers of where she can get help. 3, don't judge. If you ask your friend, "How can you be with someone like this?" or "Why are you choosing to stay?" it solidifies the false belief that she's the problem. 4, don't command her to leave him. It will only alienate her. Instead, say, "I'm really afraid for you, And if you think she's in immediate danger, say, you need to leave for the night. Do you have a safe place to go? Don't say you need to leave forever. That's too drastic. But little leave takings will give her the practice she needs to eventually flee for good. When she confides in you, don't demonize her abuser. She probably just feels compelled to defend him. Instead, say, you don't deserve this. No one does. Her abuser is giving her a million reasons why he hits her. Remind her that there's never a good reason to be beaten. Another tip, offer small, concrete steps to keep her safe. Encourage her to keep an emergency stash, clothes, house, and car keys, copies of important documents, some cash, a list of emergency contact numbers, and a safe place away from her home, like at your house or at work. Another tip, be part of her safety plan. Get to know the situations in which she's most likely to get hurt. Say Friday nights after he's been out drinking, and check on her then. Develop a code word which she can use as a distress signal, like my friend Lisa suggests. You can call and say, have you heard from Lisa? Lisa's the key word. Have a plan for what will happen next, whether it's calling the police or sending her dad over. Whichever one will ease the situation. The last tip, be patient with her. Each time she leaves him, it makes her a little stronger. She's moving forward at her own pace, even though it might not be your pace. Where to turn? If you or a loved one is being victimized, follow this advice. If you need help immediately, call 911 if the abuse is happening or imminent. Otherwise, call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233 or log on to thehotline.org. That phone number is 800-799-7233. The hotline is open 24/7, 365 days a year. All calls are anonymous and confidential. This program is funded by the United States Department of Health and Human Services. The hotline connects callers with local agencies that are able to get immediate help. If you have questions, if you say you need more info about the warning signs of domestic violence or the best way to reach out to someone, go to the National Network to End Domestic Violence at nnedv.org. If you need legal help to read up on your state's domestic violence laws and how court cases are filed against perpetrators and to see where you can find a lawyer, go to womenslaw.org. That's womenslaw.org. Tip, a woman who's being abused should make calls from a friend's phone or a payphone and should go online from a public computer. That way, it is harder for the abuser to track her activities. Blessings by Susan Heger. When I was 8, my mother drove my sister and me to Woolworths and brought us each a plant. Laura, who likes small, neat things, picked a rosary vine with leaves that dripped out over the pot. I, who really wanted a turtle, chose a spotted prayer plant that curled its leaves before it went to sleep at night. In Laura's hands, the responsible older sister, the rosary grew till it swept on our bedroom floor. Under my care, which dwindled once I got home, my plant almost died. Of course, Mom adopted it. I knew she would. Even before we came along, she had plants. The earliest was a variegated philodendron she bought for the first place she lived in. I was lonely, she told us. Afraid her plant was lonely, too, she bought it a companion, Ivy. Both came along when she married our dad, a college acquaintance she met on a blind date. As she moved with him and then us to Laguna Beach, San Manio, and San Jose, others joined in the plant life. She had a simple green stage of anything-goes phase. I appreciate plants that survive, she said. A new leaf is enough for me. By the time Laura and I left, she had 50 potted plants, curly ivies, silver plants, some that look too perfect to be real. They're my children, she explained, now that my children are gone. Recently, she moved to a retirement home like me that's like a sorority for 80-year-olds. She has a blue-on-blue room full of white Ethan Allen furniture. She arrived with no plants, giving them away. She said that life is done. Yet before long, a new friend knocked on the door and walked in with an African violet. I'm killing this, her friends cried. Mom coaxed it, budded it, fed it, moved it, gave it water. When it flowered, she called me to come see. To my surprise, it wasn't alone. Beside it was a thriving ivy, a rescue, she admitted, from the grocery store. In her sheepish silence, I guessed her secret. She was considering getting more, and she even tried to give me things. We all need responsibility, she said. How could I give up plants? They remind me of people I love. For me, any houseplant reminds me of her. I don't grow them, but I have a garden, and I understand. You tend plants, and they respond. Be patient, and they grow, keeping you company. It's a version of magic of cross-species communication that satisfies something deep in me. Eventually, I think I will try a few inside again, when my son is gone, when I have more time, or maybe when my mom's not down the road or at the end of a phone line, and I need to feel her right there in a room with me. Here's a couple of spring cleaning hints. Tip, shake it out. Gather up throw rugs and take them outside for a good shake. Then air them on the clothesline for several hours. Spring cleaning tip number two, free up the fridge. Do a quick fridge and freezer clear out to make room for springtime fare. For your next couple of meals, plan to eat up any frozen stews and soups. Spring cleaning tip number three, an oven overall. Once Easter and Passover have, well, passed, most of your roasting days are over until the autumn. So self-clean the oven some weekend. It's still cool enough that you won't swelter, and you'll be ready come holiday season in the fall. Clean your garbage disposal. Take bits of a lemon, grate the fruit into your garbage disposal to eliminate any musty odor or greasy gunk. Another spring tip for your flowers. To get more bang from your tulip bunch this spring, gently flare back the petals and trim their stems. Place single flowers in several small bud vases, or simply scatter the tulip heads on a serving tray or table. Another tip, if you like to throw parties, there are certain essentials to have on hand, like inexpensive martini glasses. I always tell people to stock up on them because they're perfect for serving everything from drinks to appetizers to desserts. This tip is from the author of Plan to Party. Another tip, want a snack that loves you back? Reach for Heart Smart nutrient-rich almonds. Just a handful a day can nourish your heart by helping you maintain healthy cholesterol levels. Here's a fun bit of information. The Ken doll turns 50 this month, joining the rank of other half-century-old men like we love, like Colin Firth, Antonio Banderas. And he is more popular than ever, thanks to his recent return as a star in Toy Story 3. Ken turns 50. The beauty tip this month, Burt Bees Lip Balm. This has a subtle hint of color, and at $3, you don't have to be a movie star to afford it. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of From Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.